Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Sam is the star host of an interplanetary travel program. Usually, Sam's adventures go quite smoothly, or at least they appear that way to viewers. Filming on Freya, however, presents some unique challenges, such as killer plants named after famous artists. Here is bonus footage, read and written by Marissa Lingen.
Every planet has at least one zone I shouldn't navigate without advice from the locals, which is usually the one I want for my episode. I know I need their help, but they're always surprised to hear it. My reputation precedes me on the Ansible, but I try to make sure it's a reputation that features thoughtful consultation with the people who terraformed a place and live there. You know, the ones who know what they're doing. Somehow that never seems to come across.
"We certainly couldn't tell you anything about that, Sam," the colony governor will gush, wringing his hands. "I'm your biggest fan, Sam," the head forester will say, a goofy smile plastered all over her face. "You're the expert here, Sam," the expert will tell me, trying to pick which of their holo collection they want me to personalize.
"Look, no, I'm not. I am absolutely and positively not the expert. I am a person who does vids on the Ansible and knows how to find the experts. I have about a day to prepare for most episodes while we travel, and that includes eating and sleeping. This only works if people who live on planets save my bacon." The Freya episode was a perfect example. "If you've only seen one of my holos, it's probably the one from Freya. The editors really did a number on it. I came out smelling like a bioengineered hyper rose. My ratings soared, but I privately thought of it as a debacle. It was easier to have twin worlds when you built them to suit. Frey and Freya were both designed to stay filled with trees throughout all their climatological zones, much to their residents' eventual annoyance. Hardly anybody wanted to make a hobby of pulling up saplings, and yet it became the leisure time activity of every Freyan, which term presented difficulty in distinguishing between residents of each planet, much to their annoyance. I was supposed to do a double episode, highlighting the tourist and investment potential of this verdant twin paradise, but the budget got cut. So all the stuff I'd learned about Frey went to waste, and I was dumped off in the waterfall district of Freya without preparation."
"Beautiful, beautiful," the colony governor said eagerly. "Now if you were going to spend 2 weeks here..."
"One week. One episode, 1 week," said Jody, who makes things happen, and also, as part of that, draws boundaries with people so I can be the charmer. "A lot of episodes are shorter than that. Count yourself lucky." Her smile wavered and restored itself, like the native Vincent willows in one of their famous breezes.
"Absolutely. Absolutely."
She repeated herself a lot. We'd have to cut that in editing. "I understand that you have a lot of plant life here from pre-terraforming days," I said. "I'm going to need a guide who is very experienced with these unique indigenous life forms and can help keep me out of trouble."
"We've arranged just the person," said the governor. "Just the person. She's been in the Botanical Exploratory Corps for years, and now she's also..." She paused for effect.
"A Girl Scout troop leader, so the girls can be part of your episode."
Jody nodded.
"That'll play really well, as long as they keep out of the way for anything dangerous."
"You can count on them. They're very responsible girls, very resourceful. They never lose their heads."
When I met them, I could immediately see that she wasn't joking. There were six of them, plus their patrol leader, Captain Louise Paradis, a slim-shouldered, jug-eared woman in serious boots. They did not have the worshipful look I was used to in the locals who were sent to accompany me, which was good. They had an intrepid, into-anything look that I was used to in... me. That was less good. We need only one of me, maximum. Jody would probably say 3/4 of me would do in a pinch. I had 7 holos ready to customize for them.
"Keep adventuring, Sam."
I handed the holos off to their parents, who were polite, but also lacked the worshipful look. All right, Clara, keep him from dying, said one of them.
That's the plan, said a Girl Scout who was already nearly as tall as I was at the ripe old age of 10. I gave the parents a weak smile that I hoped conveyed my gratitude. I had no intention of dying on Freya, Girl Scouts or no Girl Scouts. Freya had other plans. The Waterfall District, as I should have anticipated from years in this business, had a lot of changes in elevation. Of course, it would have to, or it would be the peaceful Flat River District instead. We have transport, but the viewers like to see us making our way thoughtfully on foot. It's part of the experience. They imagine themselves pausing at a little brook, taking a peaceful moment to appreciate all that engineering nature has done for humanity, and all that it's done to related species. We carefully curate the footage, so they see the special moment where the monarch finch is flying backwards in its impressive way, where the light strikes the fields of rainbow charred just so, and gives you that feeling in your throat that, yes, you can grow that on all but two human inhabitable planets, and yet I still don't like eating it on any of them. I don't mention the part about not liking chard on the Ansible feeds. The chard farming lobby is a powerful sponsor of my show. So we slogged up a great many hills that would look picturesque in the feed, because a lot of things look picturesque when you're not climbing them yourself. The Girl Scouts had a lot of songs about meeting a bear, and the things you bring to an Antarian picnic, and the gross colors of a galactic gorgle munch. I have drunk a lot of things, I said to Jody, but I have never even heard of a galactic gorgle munch. We'll have to get you one, she said. I blinked at her twice in the slightly green-tinged Freyan sunlight. I'm pretty sure she was joking, but only pretty sure. We paused to do my first informational spiel at the top of a ridge with fields of rainbow chard and O'Keefe poppies waving gently beneath. The Girl Scouts had their own agenda for whatever badge they were pursuing. I hadn't asked. Captain Louise kept the six of them doing something active and scenic in their uniforms in the background. I did it in one take. No one was particularly impressed but me. But there was a waterfall not far ahead, and that was sure to be good footage with the eager kids clamoring around it. I picked up the pace a little, making sure that I was in among them when we got there. The footage would show us looking at things together. Viewers love that sort of thing. We had our lunch just downstream from the waterfall, a sunny spot with flat rocks to sit on. It was one of the more comfortable trailside lunch spots I'd had, given that I've had to eat in the swamps of Vermid-12 and the deserts of Arakura. A fine spray of waterfall mist was a far better condiment than a dusting of sand. Down the trail from our picnic spot was a field full of gorgeous sunshine-colored lilies, swirls of red, yellow, and orange on each petal. Let's get close-ups of those. Maybe send the girls in to frolic among them. They're great. What are they? The Girl Scouts looked at each other and screwed up their mouths skeptically. It had not taken the Girl Scouts long to figure out that Jody was the one they wanted to follow around in hero worship. Girl Scouts are not stupid. But they were pretty sure I was. That's a munch lily, said Tabitha. Oh, are they edible? Tabitha and Captain Louise exchanged another one of their can-you-believe-how-stupid looks. Not munch like nom-nom, said Captain Louise slowly. Munch like the ancient earth painter. Same sort of thing as the Vincent Willows. Art was never my strong suit. Not edible, I said. Got it. Likely to eat you, said Tabitha, so don't get too close. Carnivorous lilies. Oh, good. I love this planet. I thought you were supposed to be intrepid, Tabitha complained. That's a very common misconception, said Jody, and the girls snickered. But Captain Louise was shaking her head. Don't leave Sam thinking they're carnivorous. They're not carnivorous. They'll just mistake us for something they need to neutralize. There's a difference. Warrior lilies, I said. She raised an eyebrow. In a sense, yes. And wouldn't you, if there were people trampling your house? I couldn't really argue with that. Jody jumped in. Could you say a little more about the role they play in the original Freyan ecosystem, and any theories about why they're one of the plants that survived terraforming? Oh, well, almost everything here survived terraforming, said Captain Louise. It's a matter of gouging out some space for human-safe planting and trying to keep the original flora from overtaking. She was still talking, but I wandered ahead, letting Jody get the footage she needed while I tuned them out and enjoyed the local landscape. The viewers rarely, if ever, saw Jody, but Captain Louise seemed to like to talk to her. Might as well give them space to focus on it. I stopped to admire a particularly fine patch of flame-colored petals in the sunshine. When I went to move again, my boots were stuck. I tugged.
still stuck. When I looked down, there was a clear fluid surrounding them, creeping up my pant legs and hardening as I watched. "Jody?" I said. "Jody, I'm stuck in something!" She glanced over, but it was Captain Louise who sprinted for me, ripping open her backpack. "Don't move until I say!" she cried. She dug around for a vacuum flask, fumbling with it as I watched my boots start to dissolve in the clear fluid. "I... now!" she exclaimed, dumping the flask on my feet. There was an overpowering sour scent, lemon that hit something very much not lemon, a muskier undernote, and I fell on my face in the grass in my haste to get away. My boots were a tattered wreck. I glared up at Captain Louise, who was swiftly joined by Jody, cameras, and Girl Scouts. "I thought you said they weren't carnivorous," I sputtered. Captain Louise shook her head. "I told you, they see us as something they need to neutralize. They can't eat us afterward, but we'll still be dead." "How comforting that at least we wouldn't be supper," I said. "It's not comforting, it's wasteful," she snapped. That was one word for it, but it seemed to give rather little attention to my feelings in the matter. We dug out fresh boots from the supply pack and dosed my socks in more lemon juice, to be sure. The cuffs of my pants were frayed, but I decided to leave them that way. Who knew what else this planet would bring, and besides, viewers liked it when I looked wild and rugged on camera. Setting up camp that night felt precarious, even though a clearing with some trees would usually be my ideal campsite. I tried not to walk like a stork, feeling like every time my feet hit the ground, I'd get stuck there. It wouldn't look good on camera. But the girls were an efficient camping team. They had clearly done it before a time or two, and they went around whistling, unafraid of having their shoes disintegrated. Captain Louise told fireside stories that made Jody laugh harder than I'd seen her laugh in years of recording together. The girls and I laughed pretty hard, too. It might not play as well as ghost stories for the public, but that was okay. It could just be for us. The vistas from the next day went all right, and I started to feel more at ease on Freya. This was, it turns out, a false sense of security. Our third day out, just when Captain Louise wasn't glaring at me anymore, and the girls had started to ease off treating me like a half-trained Jovian hound puppy, I finished a spiel on the joys of the Freyan weather, moderated by its plant life, turned to walk on, and put my foot on the nastiest yellow substance I've ever felt in my life. It was incredibly slippery. Think of the slimiest, snottiest substance you've ever felt, the most viscous, the most intensely slidey, and multiply that by 100. That's what was on the ground under this tree. Correction. That's what was on the hill under this tree. Because first, I couldn't feel the ground at all. Just slime. And second, being on a downward slope mattered. A lot. 1 minute I was standing there saying, "Rodan ferns seem like a strange choice of name for something that isn't very..." And the next, I was picking up speed and a viscous coating at the same time. The drone cameras weaving through the trees after me as the Girl Scouts and camera people receded from view at the top of the hill. I landed at the bottom with a thump that left me gasping. I was dripping with a faintly yellow goo. "Are you okay down there?" shouted Jody. "I'm fine," I gasped. And then I got my wind back and repeated, "Fine!" loud enough that they could actually hear me. I looked down at my slime-covered hands and instinctively tried to wipe them clean on my pants, which were also covered. So was the ground around me. There was a leaf that looked like it was pristine. I wiped my hand on it gingerly and discovered that it, too, was deceptively slimy. Everything slime. "Hold on, Sam, we'll get you out of there," Captain Louise called down to me. "I'm okay," I said. I was not okay. The drones hovered inquisitively above me. I tried to scramble to my feet and fell back down again in the slime, sliding a little further. I fetched up against a bunch of what looked like shells, though there was no water in the hollow where I'd fallen. Maybe they were rocks that looked like shells, or maybe the remains of Freyan insectoid life. There was not even a hint of glisten about them, not a bit of shine. They looked like the driest thing in the vicinity. "I think I can stand up on these shells," I said, "and maybe scrape my boots off on them, and then—" "Stay away from the shells, Sam!" Captain Louise screamed, her voice thin and panicked. I pulled my foot back hastily. "Just wait for us! We're coming!" But the next face I saw was not hers or Jody's. It was Ximena, biting her lip with determination as she clung to the hand of someone further up. After Ximena had planted herself as well as she could on the slippery slope, she reached down toward me. "Not quite far enough," she shouted back up. One or two more! Marjorie followed, using Ximena's body as an anchoring point as she made a controlled slide down the slope. I scrambled toward her.
So the shells are no good, huh? I said. Because I think if I could reach you, if I...
Leave the shells alone, Sam, said Marjorie. Tabitha's still coming.
And she was, edging her way down the chain of girls. They looked precarious to me, but they were gripping each other, arm to shoulder, in a very experienced and determined way. I grabbed Tabitha's hand, and the entire chain edged back up the hill. They dragged me like a dead orbiter going back to the station. The plants and dirt of the hillside managed to scrape some of the slime off me, and leave themselves in its place. I looked like a piece of swamp on two legs. There were aliens in the wine sector who would have embraced me as their cousin.
"Do we have anything that will get this off?" I said plaintively.
I expected the girls to laugh at me, in fact, to roll on the hillside laughing at me. But they were silent, eyes wide.
"Those were Botticelli shells down there, Sam," said Jody. "They'd have sliced you to bits. You might well have bled out before we could get you out."
"They looked like little..." "No, Sam," said Jody, and herded me into the little pop-up tent they had put up to hose me down. I sang loudly as I got laboriously cleaned off. They wouldn't show more than half a second of the footage, but they liked me to be cheerful and upbeat, and I had a lot of practice at faking that. Tiny shells that slice you to bits. What a planet. But at least I knew what they looked like now, wee pale scallops in the shade. I wondered if they had any drone shots that would make them look more dramatic than real life. Doubtful. It was not as easy to tell the girls authentic Randall Sector ghost stories with a convincingly menacing air when I couldn't stop thinking of tiny... plants? Animals? That would apparently like to drain my blood dry. Being actually scared makes it hard to be scary. I put my best game face on for the next day. We were past the halfway point, and I was a pro. I could do this. Even if the landscape had turned humid and hot and apparently full of things that didn't mind killing me for a lark before tea. I could tell the viewers were going to adore the landscape. It was once again full of hills, perfect for scenic vistas, and we were skirting a heavily forested area. For most people living on stations, cities, farms, or mining colonies, the woods had a cultural cachet none of our dramatic deserts and wetlands could manage. "What are those?" I asked, pointing into a grove of trees taller than the grain silos in the colony I'd so happily left behind. Maybe it was time to leave fear behind me and revel in the life of an adventurer. My life.
"Gentleschi palms," said Captain Louise. "They're carnivorous. They can bring down a 300-kilo cow."
"Fascinating," I breathed. Their bark was a ripple of light and shadow, the most striking effect I'd seen since rainbow eucalyptus. I moved, and the drones moved with me. I hoped they were catching the dappling.
"Come on, Sam," said Jody. "You're not really going into that canopy carver."
"Don't say that where the cameras can catch it," I said. "Or wait, no. Do say it again, but more dramatically. You're really upset. You really don't want me to go into that canopy cover. You worry for me."
Jody rolled her eyes. "I worry for your sanity sometimes. I'm not your hired talent. Get somebody else to go wide-eyed for your cameras. I just think you're nuts."
"You always think I'm nuts, but the footage is great afterwards."
The footage of this was great, too. It shows me slipping into the shadows. The squelching of the mud around my boots is so visceral you can almost feel its grip in the muscles of your legs just from watching the vid. You can see me disappearing past Jody's big camera's ability to resolve so that they switch to drones. What you cannot see, because it is cut, is me yelping like a spooked puppy as the blades of the Gentleschi palms rain down around me and I dodge in the wrong way and fall on my face. What you cannot see is Jody teaching the scouts about 17 new swear words as she improvises a shield from the nearest scout's pack, I think it was Tabitha, hoists it over her head, and dives into the sappy, sticky, sharp leaves to save me. Jody dragged me out literally by my collar, like I was a kitten and she was the annoyed mama cat. One-handed, so she could keep shielding us. That tree really wanted our nutrients, I guess. It got a little of my blood. There was a chunk taken out of my left bicep. What you can see on the footage is me, shirtless, looking brave as Captain Louise stitches up the gash. I had already been washed free of most of the sap, leaving only a few brilliantly orange dabs for effect, one on my cheekbone, one on my collarbone. I am the picture of the intrepid explorer of alien worlds. Someone in the crew has already gotten me a new shirt. You also cannot see the part where I scream repeatedly and swear way less creatively than Jody. That's really just as well. The dappling of the light shows up beautifully, though. And that's what I was there for. At least on my low days I thought it was what I was there for, and I was having a pretty low day. I wanted people to appreciate nature, and I wanted them to appreciate human ingenuity. We're on over 300 planets, but most people don't ever see more than one. There's so much out there, so much more to do and see and explore, that it's almost impossible to prepare yourself for all of it. And I just wanted people to know that they could still appreciate the universe we live in, and the wildlife we share it with. That life is not all terraformed kale farms and stale station air. I was yearning pretty hard for the stale station air, though. If the producers felt like they didn't have the time to prepare me enough to avoid this, how slapdash was the final product? Was any of what I wanted getting across to viewers at all? Or was I selling them a sanitized vision of my own competence, and possibly even theirs? Jody came and sat next to me at the campfire. Everyone else had the sense to leave me alone. "Sam, you gotta stop moping," she said. "It's our last night. We need footage of last night camaraderie with the kids." "Sure," I said listlessly. She gripped my shoulder harder than your average robot masseur. "Sam, we all have a role here. You bring the charms of the outdoor life to people who need them." "Great," she sighed. "We'll try to schedule another break in before we go to Vieti 7, okay?" "Okay, what do you want now? S'mores?" "S'mores are a classic. Even the people who have no idea what marshmallows are love to watch you burn shit." "Oh, good," I said. But I went off and dutifully burned shit and fed it to confused and sticky kids. I steered clear of the Bosch Pines the next day. I didn't care whether they were the friendliest plant in the landscape. They had an earth-sounding name and really complicated root systems sticking out of the ground, and I just did not need it. Let the cameras capture the good angles without me. But when I looked up into the canopy, at least one of the drones was not a camera at all. It was a big, clunky, gunmetal gray thing, definitely not one of ours. I knew it from my past life, though. "What's a farm drone doing out here?" I turned to Jody. "Can I see the map? Have we gotten off course?" She poked it up on her device. "I don't think so. This is just where we intended to be. Look, there's the marker, and there's our finish line. The tree line stays safe from here, I think." The drone swung around erratically. It bounced off a pine, which pelted it with sticky-edged cones. To no avail, a few of them stayed with it, but it did not stop careering around. "What's it doing?" said Captain Louise. "I've never seen anything like—" It hit another tree, and picked up some more cones, ricocheting towards us. Or not us. Her. For once, the accident was not coming straight at me. But I'd dealt with farm drones more than I cared to admit. This was not charm or charisma or sunny spirits, but like it or not, it was still my wheelhouse after all these years away. I knocked Captain Louise out of the way. She fell to her knees, gasping. I swung my pack at the drone and knocked it into a towering Bosch pine, which promptly dropped a razor-sharp needle through one of the drone's copter blades. The drone whined anxiously and fell to the forest floor, where it lay there, buzzing. Captain Louise gazed up at me, eyes wide. I helped her to her feet, still breathless. The camera swooped around us. "Thank you," she managed, as a drone camera zoomed in on her. Then she dusted herself off briskly and said, "Well, girls, who has ideas for how to get the salvage without running foul of pine cones or the needles?" They fell all over themselves brainstorming, starting with crazy kid ideas and ending up with some very sensible suggestions. Tabitha and Marjorie fashioned a lasso, and Shimena managed to hook and tighten it around the bolt that held the remaining blades on. We all cheered when it was in the safe range to touch. Jody darted in and disabled it, and the girls took turns carrying it back to town like a trophy. They were going to have a lot of material to choose from for this episode. It would be interesting to see how they cut it. I knew that whatever they did, the images of the Girl Scouts running into their parents' waiting arms would make the ending. Sweet, adorable, the viewers would eat it up. And they could cover the part where the Girl Scouts were chirping, "You wouldn't believe it! He didn't even know what a munch lily was!" And, "He'd have died without us!" with heartwarming music. Jody tried to appear on screen as little as possible, so I was sure they wouldn't use the most heartwarming part of our return to town, which was not a greeting, but a farewell. She and Captain Louise were having a heartfelt moment a few steps away from the girls. Captain Louise squeezed Jody's hand.
"All right."
Jody gazed into her eyes.
"I'll run up an Ansible bill that will make the network gasp."
She took the captain in her arms, dipped her, and kissed her very thoroughly. When they came up for air, the captain returned the favor. The Girl Scouts watched with interest. I coughed. "Right, I think there was some local plant life you were going to show me?"
"Plants can wait, Sam," said Tabitha patiently. "We've just been on a hike."
The footage of me among the Bosch pines, saving Captain Louise from the drone, got some of our best ratings ever. Jody knew it would. When I tried to ask her if it bothered her, she smiled with only half her mouth.
"This is my job, Sam. I put together programs that make the star look good. You're the star."
And that was the only reason I looked good. Most episodes had their ups and downs, but when we took off from Freya, I was feeling particularly useless. Just a rugged face in front of the camera, personalizing souvenirs with a smile. I didn't have time to get more than the quickest briefing before we were off to Sindri, so I knew it could easily be the same thing all over again there. I was not at my best when we landed, but I tried not to sulk on the outside. This was the job. I had always known it. And at least this time, Jody got to be the hero for somebody, even if the galaxy never knew it. The Sindrian liaison had an eager smile and glorious black hair with a bright violet streak. I tried to match his smile and listened to him gush about the previous episode of the show and how excited he was to film another. I wished I could be excited, too, for the sake of someone as cute as he was, but it was all autopilot and probably would be from here on out. All the way down a very slimy career hill for old Sam. I was knocked out of my self-pitying reverie by realizing that he had departed from the usual script.
"I'm sorry, what did you say your favorite part was?"
He dimpled at me. "What else? I'm a true fan, so you know it has to be the bonus footage."
"Bonus footage?" I said faintly.
"Oh yes, it's my favorite part. When the Girl Scout leader saves you from the carnivorous plants? Comedy gold! You were amazing! The main footage never shows your talent for that kind of thing. It's such a shame."
"Far be it from me to disappoint a fan." I tucked my hand in the crook of his arm.
"Did it show the part where I almost sliced my feet to bits on the bed of Botticelli shells?"
"No."
"Oh, let me tell you, it was hilarious."
"I hope that what my program shows people is the true joy of travel, learning a place as it really is, the sublime, the ridiculous, the ways that you can fall flat on your face, and the people who will help pick you up again with such charming smiles."
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.